You're tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Every Woman. I'm sitting in, operating the board for Sharon Lockhart and Amy Bell. They are live at the Unicorn Theater. Amy, Sharon, take it away.
Every Woman is a feminist show about women and girls making a difference and the men who support us. As 53% of eligible U.S. voters and 50% of humanity, women are not a special interest group, and every woman should work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in the social, political, economic, and environmental arenas. The views and opinions expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of the KKFI management, staff, volunteers, or sponsors. Good afternoon. This is a live remote broadcast from the Unicorn Theater of Every Woman. Take it away.
And we have with us today Sharon Lockhart. I'm Amy Bell. We have Fiona Nolling. We have Una Nolling. And we have Copeland. And then we also have a large in-studio audience, and if you're still out there thinking about coming by, we've got an hour worth of broadcast that we're doing, and come on down. So, Una, tell us a little bit about this subject.
This is a subject that's very near and dear to my heart. Just to introduce myself to the people in the audience who have no idea who I am, I'm Una Nowling. I am a transgender woman who is a senior engineer at a large local engineering firm. I went through my transition about 5 years ago after presenting for 18 years as my old gender. And then subsequently changed genders on the job. My gender transition and so forth was changed on the job. And after that point, I had to live and work in an entirely different world than I had done so throughout the entirety of my career. And one of the unexpected things that happened to me was having to live and work in an entirely different side of the gender divide. There were many things that I was not prepared for. I thought that I knew, that I knew most of what was going to happen. I thought that I understood a little bit because I thought that I had been sensitive to women's issues, always having been a woman inside, that I would get a good handle on how women were treated in the workplace, how women were treated socially, both in the general public as well as interpersonal situations. Overall, I thought that I knew a lot more than I really did, and the last 5 years has been quite an adventure for me and quite an education for me, and I am still learning nearly every day that I walk this world.
Hi, my name is Ari, and I actually work at the same place that Una does, which is kind of funny. And we didn't know each other until like probably 4 years ago, something like that. I transitioned at work about 7 years ago or so, and kind of like Una, I didn't really know. I actually really didn't know what to expect. I didn't really have any perceived notions of what it's going to be like. I actually physically transitioned before I told anybody, so that really made it kind of interesting. I actually changed my name with them before I actually physically transitioned, so at least people were calling me the right name, but the pronoun was kind of like delayed or like a work in progress. But yeah, I mean, for me, I didn't really know what to expect, considering I worked in an office pretty much predominantly male. The only women that worked in my office were all admins, and pretty much everyone assumed I was an admin. So I would get asked to bring people coffee and paper all the time, and I'd be like, no. I'd be like, get your own drink. I don't really understand what's wrong with your arms, but that's fine. So I don't know if I've always been sensitive to women's issues, but I've been sensitive to how people treat people differently based on gender and how people diminish people's abilities based on gender or heighten them based on gender, either way. So
what are your positions at your job?
I am the chief engineer for fuels at my job, which basically means I'm the coal goddess. I also do a lot of consulting work around the world, working with the coal power plants, renewable energy, and so forth. This involves traveling quite a bit, both within the United States as well as in Europe and Asia, South America at times and so forth, even Canada on occasion. And so not only have I been exposed to a significant difference in the way men and women are treated in the United States, but also in other countries, which has been another eye-opening experience as well.
My official title is Operations Specialist, which probably means absolutely nothing to anybody in this room, but I actually work on the water side of our business, where Una works on the power side of our business, so it's all utility work. I have a civil engineering background, but what I do is actually assist water and wastewater treatment plants. They all have licensed operators, so I actually assist the operation side of that business, and I've been doing that for, I don't know, like almost 7 years. And then in my previous life, I was a civil engineer, and all I did was heavy civil design, so pipelines, pump stations, stuff that brings water or wastewater from one location to another. So
these are jobs that people would consider within the STEM field, correct?
Yes, absolutely. Not only that, they are also positions that are traditionally very male-dominated within the STEM field.
And did that kind of affect the experience that you had?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, like I kind of said already, like I was pretty much one of only two female technical people when I was working as a project manager in Tampa, because that's where I spent most of my professional career. I actually moved here 2 months ago for a project here. So yeah, I definitely did. I mean, you know, people treated me differently because I was female. And then people expected I was not really like a technical person because of it, because there really weren't. I mean, it was just me and the office manager that were really the only female technical people there. So, go ahead.
And this actually led in some cases to potential health and safety concerns because people wouldn't follow your instructions on site because you were a woman, correct?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of my work involves me being out at physical plant sites and construction areas, so sometimes I felt like I was taken less seriously just because I was a woman, so they were just like, oh, you know, you don't really understand what I do, this is not what you do, so, you know, you just, we'll listen to you, but we're not really going to, you know, follow any of your instructions. I don't know how much of that was gender-based, really. Some of those people I don't think would listen to anybody, really, but I'm sure it had a lot to do with it, so.
I was always used to being the person who came into a room and sat down and explained to everyone that I've studied your problem, I've analyzed it, I'm the best at what I do at my very small area, this is the solution, are there any questions, because I have a flight to catch. What I was not used to having happen to me was immediately having to prove myself when I went out to clients' offices. When I went into boardrooms, when I went to a power plant, and I would lay out my plan of action for the client. I would tell them everything I had studied, everything I had analyzed, everything down to the finest details. And then at my very first site trip, very first trip as a woman out there, the client is smiling and nodding their head and looking at me. Then they turn and look at my intern who's traveling with me, who's just 6 months, still wet behind the ears out of K-State, and said, "Is this right, what she's telling us?" And it was just demoralizing, and it was a real slap across my face. I had never been able to put myself in that position, and so I just said, wow, this is really pretty terrible.
How did that intern handle the situation? I just have to ask.
He turned bright red. He knew what had happened. And see, that's one thing that at our individual company, we've had tremendous support within the company. Our company has a large amount of women engineers, and they are always treated very well and very equitably. We have no complaints at all or even criticisms about our company. And we're not just saying that because we're worried about being fired. You know, Black & Veatch is a very progressive company that really stands behind all of its employees, and it's really had a very high measure of gender equality. And my assistant had been brought up in that culture, and he was very embarrassed. He was terrified of what to say. He stammered and he said, anything Una says is right. Just listen to her.
So I'm wondering how many people in our live audience have had a similar experience, but maybe did not necessarily recognize it for what it was at the time. Would you like to share? Yes, come on up.
So this reminds me when I was a medical student, and we entered in a room, a male physician, four medical students, all male, and a fifth female medical student. We are all dressed identically. And the patient then looks at the husband and says, "Look, honey, four doctors and a nurse came to see you." And the four medical students, we are all dressed identically. The only difference was that one of the students was female, and she was automatically a nurse. So
that sounds like a familiar situation. Ari, did you experience anything going the other direction? Did you notice people start to listen to you more after you transitioned?
All I can say is I've never been asked to get a cup of coffee for anybody again, so that's always pretty nice. I'm like, oh, everyone learned to get their own beverages somehow. I don't know how that happened.
That's probably what it was. They probably just learned how
I think that might have been
to
it.
Get a cup of coffee.
I mean, it's hard to say entirely because I'd say half of the people I interact with knew me before and half of the people I interact with don't, because I don't really tell them unless I feel the need to or they hear me on the radio station or something. But, I mean, I definitely get treated better. I mean, I hate to say that, but I don't really know how else to say that. And people assume I'm more competent, too. So, or they like to make, like, jokes. Because most of the folks that I work with are, like, more blue-collar. Even if they're, like, engineers, they're, like, more on the, I don't know how to say it, non-politically correct spectrum, I don't know, with their comments. So, like, I never realized how much men talk about women after women leave the room. So I got, like, a lot of education when it comes to that. And sports, which I hate, so.
And I'd like to add on to that. I work in IT, and I started in IT as an admin assistant while I was doing my degree part-time. And one of the engineers, who was the software architect for our whole division, came and stood by my desk, right by the fax machine, and stood there for 15 minutes explaining to me how to send a fax, when he could have saved at least 13 minutes of that by just stuffing it in the machine and pressing the button to send it. But he had to show his status that he's above doing faxing things. But not only is he above doing faxing things, but you can't even trust the woman whose job it was to fax things to do it correctly unless a man explains it to her.
Yep, the joy of mansplaining.
Well, honestly, I mean, I don't know that I'd know what to do with a fax machine at this point. I mean, do we still use those? I guess we do. Everybody's nodding.
unfortunately, yes. I was hoping they would have died out sometime in the second Bush administration, but no, they still are here.
Actually, I had to send a fax, and I had to find someone in the office who seemed old enough to know how to operate a fax machine. So maybe that was a bit of discrimination, too. But really, I didn't know what to do with the thing.
Hey, guys, we need to take a break at 3:15.
Because after I was actually working on the IT side, still no one seemed to know actually how to send a fax or use the fax machine, and it frequently used to jam. And because my desk was still fairly near it, people tended to expect that I would take care of it because I was close to it. And one time it was beeping and beeping, and I was like, I'm fed up with this. So I hit the cancel button to shut the beeping up. And the next day I went away on holiday for a week. And when I came back, it still had the same error flashing on it, and no one had touched it for a week or wondered why they hadn't received any faxes.
Amy, can you hear me?
Sometimes the end of a story happens, and I just kind of sit here a little bit exasperated. Sharon has also had some fantastic experiences on the job. Would you like to share? You got to share.
I joined the securities industry in 1980 and found out, because I thought the women's movement had won. And I joined this male-dominated industry and found out they didn't want me there. I was competing on an equal level with them, and it was quite hostile. I changed firms in 89 and went to a firm with the name Ann Sons in it. I wouldn't advise anybody to do that. And after I was there a couple of years, I called management. I went to the handbook, did what you're supposed to do, and it didn't work out very well. I spent 5 years staying there during a mandatory arbitration, which I have to sign, and many people do now. Mandatory arbitration pretty much sucks. I lost that, but I didn't. In a way, I won because I only had to pay $10,275 toward maintaining my license in the securities industry. They split the fee between the Ann Sons company and myself because I had on the panel three people. One of them was a 30-year veteran of the EEOC, and the ruling came down by two of them that they did not prove discrimination. They did not prove intent to discriminate. And the 30-year veteran of the EEOC said not necessary to prove intent by law. So thus, I only had to pay half of it.
And now we actually have to take a station break for our underwriting spots, and we're going to return shortly for more live broadcast. Donna?
Thanks, Amy. Okay, we're back on the air at 90.1 FM, KKFI. And we're going live to the Unicorn Theater, where Sharon Lockhart and Amy Bell are facilitating a broadcast remotely of Every Woman. Amy?
Thanks, Donna. All right, we did have another issue come up. We talked a lot about what changes happened in the workplace from transitioning both from male to female and female to male. And one of the things that also comes up is some of your more of your civic rights and responsibilities. Largely, this is around name changes, birth certificates, that sort of thing. But one of the things is how did you maintain your right to vote?
This was something that I talked about at our event last year at the Unicorn Theater, which was a very interesting situation I ran into thanks to Chris Kobach in Kansas, who you may remember was really decided he was going to crack down hard on all those scoff laws that were going to try to vote without 12 forms of proper ID and, you know, a note from the governor, basically. And when it came time for my name and gender marker change, there's a lot of places that you have to change these things. You know, you can't change it on your birth certificate in Kansas, but you can change it on literally every other piece of documentation that you have, driver's license, passports, and so forth. One of the consequences of changing my name and gender marker on my Kansas driver's license was they said, do you want to automatically be registered for the vote? And I said, well, yes, that sounds very convenient and easy. What could possibly go wrong? Well, what went wrong is in our first election that came up right after I had done all of this registration, and the letter came literally 2 days before the election was due. They sent me a letter from Chris Kobach that said, we have no idea who you are. Our records have no record of anyone with this name or anyone who has this gender and so forth. We need you to prove that you are a United States citizen, and until you can do so, your right to vote has been revoked within the state of Kansas. Now, I was able to work out with the Johnson County Election Commission the next week that, yes, I was really a person who was a U.S. citizen and had the right to vote. I had to send them my birth certificate. I had to send them court orders. I had to send them a gigantic stack of paperwork. But, of course, by the time all of that was said and done, oops, the election was already over. So I was disenfranchised. No apology, no compensation. My vote was not counted.
And to make matters worse, the information that they gave in that letter saying you can't vote is actually false. You can provisionally vote, and you have to provide the information proving your citizenship to them within a certain amount of time for that provisional vote to count. But they deliberately gave you false information to stop you from being able to vote.
Well, yeah, that's because obviously I was up to no good.
I know you, so yes, you were.
I've actually never had an issue of voting. I'm actually not from this area. I'm originally from Connecticut. So Connecticut's pretty easy. I was able to change my birth certificate. They actually changed the rules. You don't need surgery to do it anymore. So that was actually pretty awesome. So I basically lucked out. But I will tell you, getting a driver's license where I've had a driver's license previously is definitely a challenge. So when I went to, I moved a lot for work. So when I moved back to Connecticut, like 3 years ago, I went to get a driver's license in the same place I got my original one back when I was like 20. And I put all my stuff down, and I even wrote my previous name, and I brought all my stuff because I knew, I was like, oh, this is going to be a challenge because it's the DMV already, so let's be honest. So I brought it. I even wrote my former name, and this lady literally probably stared at the screen for like 25 minutes because she pulled up my old license, and she's just looking at me, and I'm like, see, previous name, and she's like, oh, she's like, I don't know how I'm going to do this, and I'm like, okay. So 4 hours later, I got a driver's license, and like $160 later, I got a driver's license, but it's really cost prohibitive for trans people. I mean, I can afford $160 for a driver's license, but a lot of people can't, so.
Well, and the thing with voting is that voting is a right. And there is some limited ways that the reasons that people can take that right away from you. Transitioning is not actually on the rolls as a reason to take that right away, but effectively it does. And even though it was just for one election, it's a pretty fundamental right as part of the United States and as of any democracy.
Well, we currently have a president in power who feels that the rule of law does not apply to him nor anything that he does, and he is supported by a very large movement of people who take what he says as the gospel truth, even when it can be clearly and easily refuted by a simple Google search or by going to Snopes or factcheck.org or any place else. People don't really care about the facts.
And Chris Kobach is trying to take his voter ID issues nationwide. So being in Connecticut would not actually help the situation if Chris Kobach were to have his way. So one of the other questions that I'm really interested in is your experience in other countries with the difference between being male and female. You go to, like, India a lot, I know.
I've spent most of my time in Europe, but a little bit of time in Asia as well. And I have seen a significant difference. I spend a lot of time watching interpersonal differences in communication. It's part of how I'm successful working with clients, listening to their needs. Also, it's sort of a self-protection thing in a way. I'm always a little bit on edge when I'm overseas trying to figure out, you know, how I can best get around in this country. In Europe and with European clients, I noticed they are much more familiar with me than they used to be. You know, the male clients will put an arm around my shoulders at dinner or something like that. They are more prompt to touch me, to compliment me on my appearance, to compliment me on my clothing. There's much, they stand closer to me when they talk to me, and the same with the female European clients. I've even had a case where a female European client was holding my hand just walking in public, because that's what women do in that country. In Asia, I found that there is more of a barrier between me now. Now that I am a woman, men stand back a few inches further from me. They talk more formally to me, whereas before they might have, in a good-natured moment, you know, patted me on the arm or something. Now it's hands off. They don't touch me. And another thing is that the old me, which ironically was the younger me, I never get tired of saying that, by the way, I was used to being taken out after a hard day at the power plant working or whatever. They'd take me out and entertain me somewhere. We'd go out for dinner. We'd go out to, you know, do some sort of event around town. Once I transitioned, the men did not feel like they could do that anymore. It was basically, well, here's your hotel. We'll see you tomorrow. And in some cases, they would go. I would find out that if I had other contractors on site, other engineers there that were male, they would have gone out to dinner with them or gone and done something social with them while I was back at the hotel basically you know, catching up on TV.
I'd like to mention that when we were in Thailand, the whole language can express attitude towards people's gender. Una has worked there before, and I went with her for a holiday last year, and there is a term of respect in the Thai language, and the only translation that they have for it is sir, because you would only be using a term of respect like that to someone in authority and an expert in the field, and that is obviously only ever going to be a male.
I also was going to ask, is this the kind of attitude that is Vice President Pence, who won't do anything with a woman because he's so pious, he won't have a dinner with a woman, and what kind of barrier does that provide on the job? If you're someone who's, maybe say you're the vendor that's trying to entertain a client, or does that interfere with your ability to even do your job when you're not able to participate in these kind of more social bonding moments of your job?
Well, I will say this. One thing that I found out is that when one door closes, another door opens, because what I discovered at my first ever technical conference that I went to, which these tech conferences are big affairs where 10, 15,000 people from vendors, from other companies, you know, salespeople and so forth will show up. I found out that even though they were not likely to take me out to wine and dine me to talk about business, everyone wanted to go out on a date with me. This was something that completely floored me, because having grown up in the wrong body, looking as the wrong image in the mirror, I had this perception for ages and ages that I was the ugliest creature on this planet. And then immediately, when I came out and started dressing and presenting female, I started getting people asking me for dates. So I found out, well, they may not respect me technically, but at least they'll, you know, they're going to take me out dancing, or they're going to take me out and try to get me drunk or something. And so, yeah, you could say that there are other avenues, although they're pretty unsavory in the end.
You're listening to Every Woman on KKFI, and you just heard from Una Nowling and her co-worker, Ari Copeland, are presenting a program for Women's Equality Week. This is the next to last program as part of Women's Equality Week long events. And the title of this program is Crossing the Gender Divide, What We Can Learn from the Transgender Experience in the Workplace. And also on the stage here at the Unicorn Theater, I might add, this is a live remote broadcast, is Fiona Nowling, Amy Bell, and myself, Sharon Lockhart.
And this is a fun way to end Women's Equality Week. We've got so many of the women who have given a lot of their time and energy into making sure that Women's Equality Week is a yearly series of events that promotes equality in many different avenues all around the Kansas City area. So we're really excited to be bringing some other perspectives on gender. And honestly, I always find Una and Ari's stories to be really telling stories on what the gender divide actually is, because very few of us experience both sides of it. And it's a very unique perspective that we can all learn from by just hearing the way attitudes change. So, Ari has been a little bit more quiet than Una on this, and I have this suspicion it's because there haven't been a ton of stories since you transitioned that were people were treating you badly.
Not really. I mean, no, not really. I definitely get treated better, for sure. But I mean, I don't know. What I always tell people that's unique about my perspective is, since I had to work the way before, it makes me more sensitive to other women that I work with, because I actually work with quite a few women in the engineering field. There's a lot of the project managers I work with are women. 50% of my group is actually they're women. So I'm very sensitive to certain things. Like, I don't know, sometimes I'll have a conversation with, you know, something about a, you know, someone about a project, and they happen to be female, and then, you know, they'll get defensive about something. I'm like, oh, they think I'm mansplaining to them. I just need to step back and say, hey, I'm not mansplaining this to you. This is the spiel I give everybody, because I really don't know what you know at all, and it's not indicative of gender. And I just think it's funny, because how many cisgender guys think about that? I don't think any of them do, right? So maybe they do, but it's a real small percentage of the population. So.
A lot of them probably think, why are they overreacting to everything I say?
Right. It's right, where I actually say, oh, I get why this person's getting defensive, and I need to explain myself, because I could see how this is coming across as being like, oh, you don't understand anything, so let me tell you.
Which is the kind of conversations they have
right.
so frequently that they kind of assume that every conversation is
right.
is coming from a place of you don't know what you're talking
right.
about.
And sometimes they don't, but that's, the, like I said, it's not indicative of gender. Like, I never make assumptions based on that.
I also have to ask, does anybody have the, like, potty break freak out with you like they do with transgendered women?
That's it. I mean, I transitioned in an office that's not here. It was in Tampa, and actually I was the one that would freak out, really, because it's awkward. I mean, I still actually to this day don't go in the bathroom when I'm like with other people at job sites, because I also travel a lot for work, but mostly within the United States and Canada. So like, my boss is there, like, I'll wait till he it's more me than it is for them. No one's ever really come directly to me and said, oh, this is a problem kind of thing. So,
well, when you hear about laws about bathroom bills and stuff like that, they're almost always talking about transgendered women.
Right. But I think what it really is focusing on is people that are not passable. So if you're passable, unfortunately, you don't have to deal with a lot. And I wasn't always passable, so I know that for a fact. I mean, there was a time where I really couldn't go in either restroom and feel safe, because it just depends on who viewed me as what. Like, I've traumatic experiences of, like, being in the women's room, and even before I even physically did anything to myself, I had short hair, and I was masculine looking, so people automatically assumed I was, like, a young boy in the wrong place. So I definitely know what that's like. But generally, every place that has or has tried to put one of those rules in, if I'm traveling there, I usually try to drink, like, gallons and gallons of water and make sure I pee in every single restroom in the airport. That's, like, literally my goal. So in North Carolina, that's where I go to the bathroom the most.
It's like you're a dog scent marking his territory.
Exactly. It's exactly like that, saying, hey, I can go here, deal with it.
I'm thinking that people in other countries aren't quite as nervous about the bathroom deal. I was in Spain a couple of years ago and walked into a bathroom, and there were just a whole bunch of doors, and it was just men and women walking in, and it just sort of took me aback. And the doors weren't labeled in any special way, and we all washed our hands in a row of sinks. No big deal. Nobody thought anything of it. And I was recently in a restaurant here close to my office, and they had the same setup, except that there'd be a door labeled with a skirt and a door with pants on it, so you knew which was your door.
One thing I will point out, though, is that as a result of my transition, and I don't know exactly if it's the same for Ari as me, but I did research and found out there are approximately 33 countries in the world now that it would be either illegal for me to even visit or highly inadvisable for me to visit. About a year after my transition, there was a really great opportunity to teach a power plant course in Saudi Arabia. And my division head came to me, and he was all happy because I love teaching. Teaching is part of my job that I do, you know, teaching engineering classes and so forth, and said, hey, guess what? You get to go to Saudi Arabia for 8 weeks to teach. And I froze, and I said, it's not legal for someone like me to even enter that country. They will always consider me to be a male. And the law says I must show up presenting as the gender that I was born. And he said, well, how would anyone know? I said, well, what if they do? What happens? What happened is, a few years before I was asked that, executive from IBM was working in the country of Saudi Arabia. She was a transgender woman who had transitioned years before. One of the rivals that was bidding against IBM outed her to the employers, who all of a sudden said, not only do we have one of these you know, Decepticons in our midst, but they have been using the women's bathrooms. And you think about how Saudi Arabia treats the divide between men and women. She was thrown, arrested at night in her hotel, her passport, phone, everything taken away from her, and she was thrown into a male holding cell for 2 weeks while no one told her government or her coworkers where she was. When she finally, the way she finally got out is they deported her. But when they deport you, they don't just send you back to your home country. They send you somewhere that will take you. They deported this woman from Germany to Somalia with no passport, no money, no cell phone, no identification other than a plane ticket. And she only made it home because a Dutch tourist in the airport in Somalia took pity on her and let her use his phone to call home and say, "Oh my God, please rescue me." So it can be life or death going to some of these other countries.
That would have a significant impact on what you can do with your career.
It would, but I have so much work in so many other areas of the world, it's not really been a concern. I mean, there are some countries where it may not be advisable for me to be transgender, but because, just like Ari said, I have passing privilege. So it's just never really that big of a concern to me. It is a concern, and yet it's not at the same time. I just kind of work on inertia and hope for the best.
Have you been in any countries where you thought maybe I should not have come here?
Not really. I screen them pretty well in advance. So my job isn't, I'm not going to risk any sort of discipline or anything if I say, hey, I don't feel safe going to this country. Our company is not like that. They understand, and they would never force us to do something we didn't feel comfortable. I do my research, I do my homework, and it's not a big deal, really.
And Ari, have you ever experienced any sort of travel issues or feelings of not being safe in any countries or even states you've decided to travel to?
I don't really travel internationally for work. Sometimes I go to Canada or Mexico, but I don't really have any issues in those places. I mean, I'm lucky because all of my documentation that people would see are changed. So, like, the driver's license, the passport, it all matches. There was a point in time where it didn't, and that did cause problems. But the only time I really had any issues in the airport is usually the TSA. Because they, like, if you go through that body scanning machine and you get flagged as an abnormality, then you get, like, extra special treatment, meaning, like, people touch you more. So I never really enjoyed that. But no one in the TSA was ever really disrespectful. It was just kind of like, you know, they were like, well, this person's gender or genitalia doesn't match up, or they're abnormal, so now we have to, like, pat them down obsessively. But I've seen other trans people get way worse, for sure. So that's really the only travel issue I can see, so.
Yeah, and honestly, the rest of us, I don't think, have to get that detailed into how much the TSA looks at everyone naked.
It's one of the reasons where money talks in a way, because, for instance, I paid extra. Actually, I talked my company into paying extra for having the TSA pre-check, where I have never been sent through the body scanner since. They use the magnetometer. But that's, again, a $75 fee, plus you have to take off work and go down for a couple of hours for biometrics. These are fees and barriers and obstacles to just being treated with a basic level of respect that no one should have to go through.
We've talked about work and we've talked about travel. What about other ways of where you interact with people? How have you been treated differently outside of work?
It's kind of, I don't know, it's hard to say. I mean, now I get, like, with guys, I feel more included now because they view me as one of them. So I get to hear all the things they talk about, which I normally would not listen to if I was a woman. And I kind of miss that, to be honest with you, depending on what they're talking about. But, you know, like, now I get to listen to all the sports talk, none of which I care about. And then I get to listen to, you know, them telling me all the women that they want to be with and things like that. It's just kind of like, I don't know, I'm not really a macho bro-y kind of person, so now I get to feel like that energy is like forcibly on me now, where before I was kind of like invisible and I didn't have to deal with it. So, but I mean, you know, each side of it is different. So like now I'm not included really in like girl talk anymore, quote unquote, even though I used to be. So it's kind of odd because most of my friends are actually women still. So anyways, yeah.
There's two sides to a coin here I want to address very briefly. The first one is I'm treated much better many times as a woman in a way that I shouldn't be. When I'm on the plane trying to lift my roller bag into the overhead bin, yes, I'm one of those people that puts like 70 pounds in a roller bag. When I was a small, scrawny, 5'4" guy, no one would help me. Men on the plane would look at me and sneer and say, "You need to work out, buddy," or something. As a woman, if I just look like I'm having trouble, I have three people lifting my bag up and, you know, clearing the way for me. I am helped down when I'm stepping off a bus. The driver will put his hand out for me, whereas before, if I needed help, they would just ignore me. We should not have to have basic courtesy and friendliness in society be based on whether or not a person is male or female. I appreciate it now. It's nice when I need it because I'm not as young as I used to be, and sometimes I do need a hand case. But why couldn't they have helped me when I was a guy and needed help? And the other side of the coin, too, are the negative parts. Again, I mentioned before my problems with my body image and how ugly I thought I was. One thing I did not plan for in my gender transition was sexual harassment. And again, I need to reinforce, just for the sake of clarity, nothing has ever even hinted at being happening at our company that way. We've always been treated with dignity and respect there. But on the road, clients, vendors, normally it's vendors, or it can just be random people in a hotel lobby or sitting next to you on the plane. I have had hands on my body more times than I can count. Men feel like that they can drop their hand in my lap on a long international flight when I'm packed back in coach class. They can grab me. They can ask me for a kiss. They can start trying to ask me intimate sexual details on a plane. They can take my... At my very first time out at a technical conference, I walked onto the trade floor, and right at the start of the floor, there was a Harley Davidson, because they give away some Harley Davidson motorcycles at Electric Power. 2 minutes on the floor, I walked up and looked at the motorcycle because I thought it was pretty. A man I never met before in my life walks up next to me, slinks an arm around me, and says, "I'll bet you'd look really sexy straddling that bike." And it's only gone downhill from there.
And she didn't even get a free bike out of it. Yes, I'm bad. I will say that, like Ari, I tend to do some more traditionally masculine sports. So when I was at university in England, I actually used to rock climb and scuba dive, and the vast majority of the people that were doing that were guys. And so you're going climbing and you're belaying someone and you're sitting with someone for 15 minutes. They will talk about whatever is on their mind. So they wouldn't feel uncomfortable. They made me an honorary guy. So I knew all sorts of things about them having sex with their girlfriend, who I also actually knew and shared a house with, and things I should never have known about that person. So that was kind of weird that I'd had the same experience as you.
Amy and Sharon? Small talk, either gender, can get really uncomfortable really quickly. I'm sure we've all experienced that, actually. Do we have any questions from the audience? We need to make sure that you get to ask your questions. Yes. Oh, that is a thing that's happening right now. Donald Trump has declared that transgendered people can't be admitted into the military. And is that a new development, that they actually are being evicted from the military?
He had his tweet temper tantrum about it last month, and it was just late last night that he came out with the official directives. And as I talked about this on the Trans Talk program a couple hours ago, you know, he obviously had a staffer write it because it had correct spelling and grammar, and you know, it made somewhat sense. And basically, the administration has given a giant middle finger to the thousands and thousands of honorably serving transgender fighting men and women that have been out there willingly enlisting to put their lives on the line to protect us, protect this country, and to try to help out the world. And he said, you know what, even though I dodged military service because I had an imaginary bone spur or whatever, I'm not going to let these other people that want to volunteer and want to be part of protecting this great nation of ours do it. I'm just going to throw them out. And it doesn't matter that even the high-end estimate for health care costs was only $8 million and that Trump's golf course associated costs this year so far up to, I think that there's a website that tracks them. It's like Trump's golf course costs. I think it's up to $62 million this year so far. I mean, not, it's just a complete amount of cognitive dissonance. This was not the place for Republicans to be targeting. This was the wrong thing to do on so many levels that it just stuns me.
All right, we do have to take another pause for a station break, and then we will come back. And I have some more questions about the military service thing and how it affects careers, too. But Donna, we're going to send it over to you right now.
All righty, here we go. Okay, take it away, Amy and Sharon, over there at the Unicorn Theater.
Crossing the gender divide in the workplace, and we do have a question from audience member / part-time host of Every Woman, Ann Bridget.
I was just wondering if you all had heard that I heard this morning that the Trump administration said that they would not stop the medical process for any transgendered person who is undergoing the medical process at the time because it was harmful to their health. But that really surprised me because I don't see them as having much of a heart towards anyone, especially people who are different. So I just wondered if you had heard that.
Yes, I read his directive and I did note that was in here. There's essentially two things about it. The first thing is there's just not that many transgender troops that are currently in the process of transition because it was only until very recently that there was even any backing towards medical treatment. And they basically just want us to go away. That's why they've also grandfathered in for at least 6 months that the existing troops can, in theory, remain in the service as long as the Defense Secretary Mattis decides not to kick them out, and that this mainly affects new enlistments.
We do have another question from the audience. Come on up.
So I apologize. It's more of a comment than a question. And so in order to prepare for this talk today, I jot down some statistics that I wanted to share for a moment. So there is actually 1.3 million current active duty personnel, and anywhere from 1,320 to 6,630 transgender active personnel. So that accounts for one per every 1,000. And the low end of the cost is $2.4 million, to high end is $8.4 million, which is a lot less than a single trip for the golf course for President Trump. The second thing that I wanted to tell you, that about 25 new patients that come in for therapy from the 1.3 million. I practice in Lawrence, Kansas, town of 84,000. I currently have 20 patients in Lawrence. So the entire military, there's 30. And in a small itty-bitty town, I have 20 patients. So the tremendous cost that he's talking about, I'm sorry, where are these people that he is talking about?
Well, and the other thing that I know a lot of people go into the military as part of a career plan that boosts their hireability, maybe furthers their education. So a lot of these transgender individuals will have a halt to the first portion, maybe the first stage of their working lives. And Have either of you faced workplace setbacks that set your career back by a number of years just because of the transition? And do you feel that that is what's going to happen to people who are thrown out of the military?
I don't feel that I'll experience a setback because of transition. If anything, I probably would have been set back if I hadn't transitioned, actually, because I used to tell, you know, in my previous life, you know, I was very guarded. I wasn't very genuine at all. I didn't let most people even get remotely close to me. So that definitely impacted my career, because I feel if you're not relatable, or you're not really, like, if people can't relate to you as a person, that definitely impacts you on a professional level too, because you can't take the people aspect out of it. So once I transitioned, I was more who I really was, and that actually helped me. So, but I also dealt with people that were, you know, intelligent and forward thinking to a certain degree, or even if they didn't agree with it, they didn't care because it was work and that's it.
Just be professional and move on with your day.
Right. Because I definitely know there were people at work that didn't agree with it. Some of them, I'm sure, talked behind my back for years and still do. But the difference is they didn't do it in a way that was detrimental to me. Whatever they thought, they thought. So, anyways.
Ari has hit the nail right on the head with this. It's a really sad irony that a very, very large number of transgender persons who come out are going to lose not only their job, but can potentially be blacklisted from their entire career. Everything that they've devoted their lives to, both in terms of hard work and effort, as well as their education and background. I have a long list of friends who came out and lost their professional careers and have either ended up being underemployed or unemployed completely. And Ari and I are outliers. We are the exceptions, because not only did we have a company that stood behind us and cherished us and supported our transition, but our jobs have actually got better. Because when you can be the real you, like just like Ari said, when you can be really live your entire life to the fullest, and some of that, of course, goes into our careers and our jobs, then you become a much better employee overall. And that's a stupid thing that employers don't realize. Instead of saying, let's get rid of this freak, let's get rid of this monster, this weird person that's changing, they should be saying, let's celebrate this person, because however good of an employee they were in the past, they're probably going to be doing a lot better now.
I'd like to ask Ari, because that everyone gets socialized different depending on what gender they are perceived as, and girls tend to get praised for being quiet and doing small discrete motions and expressing emotion. How do you feel that that affected you? You said you got to be finally your true self, but how do you think that earlier conditioning affected things and how you adapted to the workplace when you finally got to be your true self?
I mean, I was able to be more open. I got to, you know, like guys, you know, mess around with each other and like trash talk and stuff. So I got to do that, which is really my personality anyways, as Una and Fiona know. Like, I live for that. So the fact that I could do it and have it be socially acceptable was actually pretty awesome, because before it really wasn't. And you know, in men's defense, you really can't do that with women, because some women do get offended by it. Like, they don't enjoy that. And I've actually experienced that. So you just have to look at each individual person as a person, which is what I try to do.
That's a really interesting concept you've proposed there. Treat people as individuals.
Exactly.
We are actually coming up to the end of our time here today, but I want to thank Ari Copeland and Una Nalling for sharing their stories on the gender divide and their unique perspectives on both sides of it. I'd also like to thank the women who have organized Women's Equality Week. We've got some of them in the audience here. I see Alice Kitchen and Jane McLean and Rosemary Woods.
Gail
James is listening. She told us she could not be here today. But thank you to everyone. Sharon recognizes more people here. I'm going to pass this on to her.
No, I can't see.
Oh. If you're with Women's Equality Week, could you raise your hand? Yes, we have got six or seven women in the audience here today that helped organize this wonderful week of activities centered around women's equality. And we're really happy to be a part of Women's Equality Week at KKFI, and we're really happy to be doing this live broadcast as part of the festivities on Women's Equality Week, and it, although unfortunately it means that it's coming to an end.
Not quite. There's one more event, August 31st. Alice, can you come up here quickly and tell us where they can go on August 31 for Equal Means Equal?
Yes, we're having the film screening again, 90 minutes on all of the different ways that women are discriminated against at the Truman Library in Independence. And I believe it starts at 6:30. And be sure to either go on our website or contact us. But reservations are good, but don't let that stop you. Come and participate and look at what we have yet to do.
And we're going to turn it back over to Donna Wolf, and make sure you stay tuned for Urban Connections and Guess Who's Coming to Kansas City. Thank you, everyone.